Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host, Tom. I'm here with Sam, just like always. And Sam, we're talking more about Liara, right? We already did two episodes. We talked about, two episodes just on Mass Effect 1, right? So it's like Mass Effect 2 time? Time to move on?
Yes, but actually no.
Oh,
because okay. we're gonna be talking about what Liara is doing in the 2 years that Shepard is dead, which happens during Mass Effect 2.
Yeah, okay, so this is the interperiod, and I love these inter- or pre-game periods because we always get such amazing comic book art.
Yes, usually full of butts, and there are more butt shots in the comic that we're going to talk about, but we are not going to be dwelling on the butt.
Right, but so, usually the butt shot comic book stuff is like before the games. This time, if this is in between Mass Effect 1 and 2, right? So Liara's lore really continues without Shepard. This is like a no Shepard period of Liara lore.
That's right. It's a no Shepard episode.
No Shepard. Get out of here,
no Shepisode.
No Shepisode.
It's the no Shepisode. So yeah, absolutely. Liara is the main character of Mass Effect at this point in the lore.
Awesome. I'm down
although
for that.
Okay, so we're going to be going into this Mass Effect Redemption comic, right? And it's 92 or 93 pages. So it's a long comic. By far longer than most of the other comics. And although other characters have these backstories that also take place while Shepard is dead, Liara's is substantial. We know a lot about what happens.
Wait,
and how it
happens.
Did
you just make a reference to her substantial backstory?
I wasn't trying to, but there are like a few different butt shots of Liara in that comic book. We will not be harping on her butt, but and it just so happens that
butt harp.
I have bought the whole collection. And I've read this one already. So when I was researching for this episode, I was actually just going back and refreshing a little bit. And we're going to cover some key parts from Mass Effect Redemption here.
Okay, so where do we start? Like her story picks up right after Mass Effect 1? How does that work?
Yes, there is that opening scene of Mass Effect 2 where the Normandy is shot down. And if you romanced Liara, or if you didn't romance anyone in Mass Effect 1, then Liara is the squad mate who is checking on Shepard in that scene while Shepard is still putting their hard suit on.
Shepard!
Distress beacon is ready for launch.
Will the Alliance get here in time?
The Alliance won't abandon us. We just need to hold on. Get everyone onto the escape shuttles.
Joker's still in the cockpit. He won't evacuate. I'm not leaving either.
I need you to get the crew onto the evac shuttles. I'll take care of Joker.
Shepard!
Liara, go! Now.
Aye, aye.
All right, so this is a very dangerous scene, right? You've got fire, you got explosions, there's clearly emotion in her voice. We talked previously how she tends to rein in the emotions a lot, but in a situation like that, she seems absolutely worried. Like that's the sense I get, right? That she yeah. genuinely cares.
Yeah, I mean, there, you know, there's like apparatuses exploding on the ship that's all on fire. Shepard is like putting on their helmet and then putting out some fires and just trying to arrange things like in a very hurried manner. And meanwhile, Liara is like, come on, like I'm going to be here with you. I'm not leaving. And Shepard is in like commander mode, right? And thinking, no, I need you to do this. I need you to get people on the shuttle so that I can do this and I'll go get Joker and like, you know.
Right.
You can tell Shepard right. is arranging these different things in their head. And Liara is all focused on Shepard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. When you compare the two of them, Shepard is being the commander in the situation. It's all still very professional. This is what we need to do to get out of here. And Liara is actually panicking for Shepard. And at least that's yes. what it feels like. Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that, like, there's not a lot. Like I said, if you didn't romance anyone in Mass Effect 1, then Liara is the person here. But if you did romance someone, and it's not Liara, so if it's Caden or Ashley is there.
Yeah.
And then their concern makes a lot more sense, right? But if you didn't romance anyone, and then Liara is still there, and Liara's hyper-concerned, you're like, okay, wow, she's really dedicated. And then the next thing you know, Shepard walks up the bridge, gets Joker, puts Joker in the pod, and then boom, like everyone else has escaped, it seems, except for a few that already died and will die. But Shepard dies and Joker sees it happen. And if you only played the games, then the next time that you see Liara in the lore isn't until Ilium. And that's like, you know, what, halfway through Mass Effect 2?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you don't see her for quite a while, but this is why the extended media is important, because it covers just what she was doing during that time. Like I said, she takes a central role in this 2 years that Shepard is dead. Just a few months after the Normandy is destroyed, she is seen on a ship flying into Omega, and here's where we really start with the comic, where the comic picks up. She gets to Omega and she heads right to Afterlife because she's apparently looking for someone. She's going to meet a contact of hers. And we still don't know much about why, you know, she's meeting this person at this point. And I have a bit here from the comic that I want to show, not because it's particularly important for the lore, but it's got good flavor. So Liara is asking an Elcor in Afterlife if he's seen someone that she's looking for, and he's annoyed, saying that he hasn't. And Tom, you want to take a stab at reading an Elgor voice?
No, I shouldn't do this one. You know, though, he kind of looks like Jabba the Hutt in this picture. I kind of want to give him a Jabba the Hutt voice.
Jelcor?
Like Jelcor. Like, oh, 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 nor have I been looking. You know, like something like that. But I don't think it's appropriate. I'll just read the text. Nor have I been looking. Sad. Stan. This is, the text is actually small enough on here. It's hard for me to actually.
Yeah,
read it.
Said standoffishly.
Right. What do you think? I am using an old joke. The bar's information minister? ?
And then Liara is like, well, I didn't mean to offend. I just thought.
And then he goes on and says, you thought because I was an Elcor, a little, some of the text is just too small, a little miffed. I wouldn't be watching the gyrating flesh things all day. Elcor are good dancers.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
So he's like, he's all pissed off because he's like, oh, you thought because I was an Elcor, right? Mm-hmm. And right after that panel, he says, pitifully, no one gives us the chance.
Yeah, right.
To dance.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, you know, you thought Elcor are good dancers. Well, no one gives us the chance. So a little bit of flavor text to open up the comic right there. And then, you know, we fast forward a little bit, but and Liara has met her contact, Farron. And we realize that Liara is looking for Shepard. And so now we have this, you know, situation where a few months after the Normandy has blown up, and Liara seems to be the only one who has refused to give up hope looking for Shepard.
Right. So does this mean that she doesn't know that he's dead? Or maybe there's things that she knows that other people don't? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, in a way. So Farron, her contact that she's just meeting for the first time, tells her that he's either dead or he's very close to it. And so it seems that even he doesn't know, really, for sure. But this is a tense conversation where Farron is essentially is telling Liara that she's getting way in over her head, searching for Shepard and poking around where she really shouldn't be poking around, and that it's basically better to, quote, let the dead sleep. And it's a, and you know, like if someone tells you that, there's almost like a vague threat behind the words.
Yeah, it doesn't, it's not, that argument doesn't hold a lot of weight. It's more of a, just let it lie because that would be good for you. There's kind of that feeling behind it, right?
Right. It's better for all of us if we just let this die.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I've been told that by a past employer before. By the way, if you ever say that to a journalist, you have activated like their Super Saiyan journalist mode. And if they are a true journalist, they are now more interested than they ever have been. I promise you.
Yeah, no, that is a red flag. Like, okay, there's more here. And I would assume that that's also a red flag for somebody like Liara.
It is. It is definitely. And I was actually thinking about this in no uncertain terms while I was reading this, that Liara would make an excellent journalist. So she's quite stubborn here, and she insists on finding Shepard no matter what condition they are in. And we realize that she has paid Farron for this information. Mm-hmm. So she's also like, you know, pissed off. You know, I paid you for this.
And it's kind of like a nod, a little nod to where her story eventually goes.
Exactly.
Right.
Being an information broker.
Yeah.
And so then, okay, so Farron is like, okay, follow me. We can't talk about it here, right? We got to walk away from afterlife. And then they are ambushed from some Blue Suns mercenaries who we later learn are hired by the Shadow Broker.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. So if anyone's played the Shadow Broker DLC, you already know where this is going. So shut up and don't spoil it for everyone else. But it's because we later learn that the Shadow Broker was trying to sell Shepard's body to the collectors. But right. Important to note that Liara doesn't know this yet at this point in the lore.
Right. She's still in the dark here.
Yeah. Yes. So she's captured and she gets interrogated by the Krogan leader of these mercenaries. And here's where I think that we really start to see some character changes in Liara. She's talking to a Krogan mercenary and she does not back down or even try to approach this situation diplomatically at all.
Yeah, here's the panel on this one. I think the text on this one's a little bit bigger. So there's the Krogan with the gun says, keep those biotics in check. You as much as flinch, and you'll have more gouges in your pretty skull than you were born with. Gouges?
Yeah, gouges seems a little vulgar.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. Okay. And then it goes on and says, you came all the way to Omega looking for someone who's dead. The Shadow Broker wants to know why. And then Liara responds, my interest.
Oh, I was going to take
that. Oh, go ahead. You do it. Go ahead. Okay. Yeah, you do it. So, again.
Commander. No. My interest is my own business, Krogan, not that of some mercenary, and certainly not the business of some distant information trader. So she is standing up right now. Thank you. Thank you. She's standing up right now to someone like three times her size with.
And probably 10 times stronger. Like it's a freaking Krogan. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And let's not diminish her biotics here. You know, she is a skilled biotic, but
sure.
Like to stand up to a Krogan in close quarters combat like this.
Right. Like as fast as he can punch you in the face, you may not be able to put up any sort of resistance, you know, fast enough. So, yeah, still dangerous.
Right. Right. So totally dangerous situation. It's very tense. And then surprise, they are miraculously rescued by someone. And it's just in time. It's Cerberus with Miranda.
What? Miranda?
And right, for some of our, like, you know, regular listeners who have already listened to the Miranda episodes, this will all come together. You're probably making some crossroads as I speak in your brain where you're like, hold on a second. I remember this exact scene, but from Miranda's point of view.
There's no way Miranda shows up. Yeah, Miranda shows up.
Yeah, suddenly Miranda. So yep. Liara talks with Miranda, who tells her, we might be able to bring Shepard back. And so this is huge news because she was just told that Shepard's dead or likely dead, which she already probably knew because she saw Shepard get, you know, spaced.
Yeah.
And this, again, this is huge news for her because she has left every plan or comfort or opportunity that she could have pursued after Shepard's death. She has said she has put pause on her own life. And now she's realizing, okay, Shepard may be able to be brought back. Like, there could be hope, even if it's coming from the worst possible source.
Yeah, like, I would imagine that this is a very... these are not the heroes she expected in this situation. You know, like, oh, good, Miranda shows up, but in league with the elusive man and Cerberus.
Yes, and if your canon is that you were a completionist in Mass Effect 1, then Liara was on the crew when Shepard took down some Cerberus cells, and not the least of which were doing, like, terrible acts to Alliance personnel.
Yeah.
So
yeah, she can't have so a positive view of this, and she, at this point, doesn't really know who Miranda is.
No,
in fact,
not
Miranda
really.
Doesn't even know who
meeting.
She is. Like, Miranda's, like, it's just so early in Miranda's story that, like... Yeah.
Miranda, knowing Cerberus, Miranda got a dossier, right, about Liara, and understands that Liara was one of Shepard's crew. But, you know, Miranda doesn't really know who Liara is.
Yeah.
And so Miranda takes her promptly to see the elusive man, and he ultimately recruits Liara because they are, quote, working toward the same goal. But it's not without some hesitation from Liara's point of view. At this point, Liara doesn't really see many other options if the Shadow Broker is the opposition, because these are two extremely well-funded, extremely powerful foes. And, you know, it's kind of like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Yeah. And Liara has very limited resources. So,
well, I would imagine there's also a certain fear for her own safety. If the Shadow Broker can just send anybody out, you know, she's not safe anywhere. So
I would be afraid,
but
Liara is being like a hero here because she is prioritizing Shepard and seeing, or at least getting eyes on Shepard's remains to verify what has happened. She's prioritizing this over her own safety, you know, and Farron warns her before meeting with the elusive man that, hey, this is a human supremacist organization, you know. I this is fucking crazy. And Liara says, at least they seem to want to get Shepard back.
Yeah.
I found the language here to be kind of interesting. At least they seem to want to get Shepard back.
Yeah, everything points to Shepard being her primary focus throughout all of this.
Right. You know, we can interpret this as that, you know, like, okay, at least they seem to want the same goal. Or, you know, at least someone wants to.
Right.
Implying that, I think this implies that Liara has tried other avenues, like lobbying the council or the alliance to step up, but ultimately they declined action, you know, so maybe Farron wasn't even her first go around, her first attempt.
Yeah.
Or I think we could possibly interpret this, at least they seem to want to get Shepard back. Maybe we can interpret this line of hers as, at least they seem to want to get Shepard back.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's good enough for her.
Yeah. Now, either way, it seems like she's very alone, and so she's taking whatever opportunity she can get at this point.
Right. But, you know, both all ways to interpret this, I think, show just what lengths she is just willing to go to be reunited with Shepard, even if they are dead. And I think that we should really ruminate on that a little bit, because think about how much you have to love someone for this to be the case, and this is the canon, right? So it doesn't mean that this is only what Liara does if Shepard romanced her. This happens regardless.
Right. Well, either, I mean, and it may be a combination of two things. It may be personal affection, but it also might be that during her time with Shepard, she realized how important Shepard is to what's going on in the galaxy and doesn't see that solution anywhere else.
Yeah, I think so. And I also kind of feel like the game may hint at the fact that even if you don't romance Liara, Liara falls in love with you.
Yeah, she still seems to have feelings. I think it's those two things tied together. And Oftentimes people are more motivated by their emotions in a situation than by the logical reasoning of a situation. So even though she might intellectually know that Shepard's the right person for the job, that the universe needs him, you know, the galaxy needs him, deep down, the motivation is probably more primal than that on some level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I think it's important for players to keep in mind that Liara really only worked with Shepard for a few months. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. only knew Shepard for a few months, and incredibly important mission. But
it's like being a part of the Bachelor. She was a cast on a show. There were lots of people who were trying to fall in love with the main character. What if we had a Bachelor Mass Effect edition?
Oh, people would play that game for sure. I know that there's totally. Been more than a few people who have asked for a Mass Effect alien dating simulator spinoff.
right.
But, you know, I mentioned that this happens regardless of whether or not you romance Liara. And I think part of this is part of why a lot of people feel like she is indirectly implied to be the canon romance if there was going to be a canon romance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Aside from being able to romance her and only her through the whole trilogy. She's the only character that you can romance in every single game.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that she is so focused on Shepard and bringing him back and all of that stuff, that it ties into that. We joked about it on one of the previous episodes about her being like the second main character, but she really does feel like the second. She is the sub protagonist. Shepard is the protagonist. Yes. She's the next protagonist in line. If it wasn't for her, like you could probably get rid of a lot of the other characters, a lot of their side quests and things like that. And you could probably end up still roughly in the same direction by the end of the trilogy. But there are things that I feel like Liara is crucial to, and this whole section seems to show that evidence for that.
Absolutely. And that's not even taking into account the significance that she has when we get to Mass Effect 3 and the Mars Archives. You know, we'll talk about that eventually, but exactly, even at this point in the story, it's like, wow, the significance that she has to the lore is,
it's crucial.
I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
And so yeah, we can't help but feel that she's irreplaceable.
Right. So does she take up the elusive man on his offer? How does that go?
Yes, he makes her an offer that he knows that she won't refuse. And that's right after informing her why the Shadow Broker wants Shepard's remains. His argument to Liara is basically the collectors are perverse aliens who abduct other aliens from time to time. We know very little about them, and we don't know why they want Shepard. So you need to find out. Or basically, we need you to find out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is somehow, Cerberus has confirmed that it's the collectors working with the Shadow Broker.
Right. Well, they've got a lot of informants across the galaxy and all that. So it's kind of not a surprise that they would have information that she doesn't have.
Right. And this is kind of central to it. The elusive man even tells her, we need someone who has a personal connection, who has the drive to find Shepard no matter the cost. Right. And so that's why they tap her. They must have intercepted some kind of communication between her and Farron, or found out through one way or another, hey, you know, one of Shepard's former crew is actually trying to track down Shepard's body. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, you know, while Liara is talking with the elusive man, she's apparently still trying to feel out his argument. And we have a comic panel here from that conversation.
All right. So do you want to do your Liara voice again? And I'll do... I don't think I can do an elusive yes. man, but I can try.
All right. I will try my Alara. Alara?
Alara?
What is that? Am I? Wow. I'm having a stroke on air. Liara. Here's my Liara voice. Why me? You have all these resources, and you have Miranda and her people here.
It's difficult for me to contend directly with the Shadow Broker out in the Terminus systems. And while Miranda has her role to play, nothing beats someone with a personal motive driving them. You were very close with Commander Shepard. When I heard you were here, I knew I wanted you on my team. The Drell, Farron, does seem to have a lead on Shepard. I suspect he also may prove useful for an alien.
Racist. Will you
work with him? Can we count on you?
So she answers, no, but Shepard can.
Oh, comic like, books.
It's so comic book. It's so cheesy and comic booky, but you know.
My X-Men, to me. Yeah, like it's, right, like,
yeah.
No, but Shepard can. I feel like it's one of those lines that you might see multiple times throughout the series. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, and it is cheesy, but it illustrates the dedication, I think, above all. The dedication here is unlike anything that we see from any of the other squad mates that Shepard served with in Mass Effect 1 and were later reunited with. Like, God love Garrus. I love him. But he went off and did his own thing, right? And so did Tally. And so did Rex.
Mm-hmm.
And so did Ashley or Caden.
Right. Right. And even in this situation, the elusive man mentions a personal reason. It's as if he can tell that there's more going on there.
Right. Yeah. I would have loved to have seen, like, you know, extensive personal dossiers on Liara that the elusive man had.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Yeah, that would have been great. All right. Well, we've got more to this story, but we have to go thank our patrons. And we've got another planet card. Planet cards are still back, so don't go anywhere.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. We've got a brand new patron who actually just signed up like 2 hours ago. Welcome to Onyx Osprey. Thanks for joining us. I hope you are enjoying the benefits of the Patreon. And we have to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, Edboy, Kirasi, Lieutenant Tosino, and William. Thank you so much for your support. And to all 61 of our current patrons, thanks for being here. Thanks for supporting the show and keeping it going. If you are interested in checking out all the stuff you can get, like t-shirts and stickers and joining us on patron chats and ad-free episodes even at the lowest levels, then go to patreon.com/MassEffectLorecast. Check everything out over there. Also, you can help us out by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it out on a future episode of the show. We don't have any new ones this week, but that is a great way to help us out. Those reviews end up all over the internet. They aren't just for Apple. Plus, you can review the show or rate the show on Spotify and whatever other platforms you listen to this on. You can share it with your friends and all sorts of other stuff. But thanks for being here. We really do appreciate all the help. We couldn't do it without you. Sam, what's our planet card this week?
Planet card.
Planet card.
We need to make a sound effect for that.
Yeah.
It is Haagen-Dazs. Excuse me. Haagalaz.
Haagen-Dazs, the planet.
The Haagen-Dazs planet.
That sounds like a delicious
Everybody
planet.
Rocky Roads cover Haagen-Dazs.
Would it just be a gigantic planet made out of ice cream?
Crisscrossing moose tracks from the biota there.
Can you imagine walking on ice cream? Like,
wouldn't you just
sink in? Wouldn't it get gross? Like, how long? No, I don't know. This is getting weird. All right. Haagen-Dazs?
Like bog.
Yeah. It would just be like a big
ice cream
and like milky. And then it would get gross because it's all milk. I don't like that planet would be disgusting very quickly.
Okay. I have one more ice cream pun to make, and I swear that's it. But
okay.
The irony is that we're just going to go into the planet card. Planet card.
Okay.
Haagen-Dazs is a second-tier garden world that receives little attention from the galactic community. A Solarian mining expedition initially discovered the planet, which was promptly strong-armed away from them by organized crime figures. Haagen-Dazs's exploration rights were then sold to the highest bidder, which led to a brief burst of mining colonies in the 2000s. But most of those were abandoned when other planets were found with more accessible resources. Though Haagen-Dazs has a nitrogen-oxygen atmosphere capable of supporting life and ice cream, its rotational period is slower than Earth's, making its day and night 98 Earth days long.
How'd you like that's a long work week once you have that up.
Yikes. I need a weekend after one day. The intense heat on one side of the planet and the extreme cold on the other make for violent storm cells wherever the sun is rising or setting. Therefore, the planet Haagen-Dazs is half-baked.
It's just baked ice cream on one side and then it's like cold ice cream on the other?
Yeah, well, for my Ben and Jerry fans, the half-baked is a flavor. It's my favorite flavor, actually. It's got it's vanilla and chocolate swirl with chocolate chip cookie dough and brownie chunks in there.
That sounds good.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
in fact, I have some in my fridge. not in my fridge.
Not in your fridge, because that would be soup. That would be ice cream soup.
That would be gross. Anyway, yes, someone here in chat, Berg Reppin, understands the power of half-baked ice cream. So anyway, the rest of the planet card. As a result of the planet being half-baked, the flora and fauna of Hagalaz have developed the capability to live in cycles of ice, flooding, baking heat, and dramatic air pressure changes. The biota of the planet has been largely unexploited by the exotic pet and gardening trades, since simulating their natural conditions is problematic for the average consumer.
That sounds insane. Like, you'd end up with, like, firestorms on the horizon every time the sun, like, set or rose. But, like, just, that's nuts. That sounds crazy.
Yeah, you'd be, like, running from the sunset.
Right. Yeah. Like, you couldn't just stay in one place. I can't imagine with the atmosphere changing due to that much, I don't know, heat change and temperature and all that, that you'd end up with very many species that can survive that. But I guess they'd be really hardy.
If the planet's day and night cycle is 98 Earth days long, could you actually run away from the sunset?
I guess it depends on the diameter of the planet, right? Like, if you could run or walk faster than the planet rotates compared to the sun, you know, like, I don't know. I'm sure there's some math.
I'll do the math on that. And you know what? I'll post it to the Discord. And if you're not part of the Discord, this is why you should join.
There you go. Now you'll know if you can outwalk the sunrise. All right. So that's a crazy planet. Why did we choose this one?
We chose this one because this is integrally involved with the Lair of the Shadow Broker DLC in Mass Effect 2.
Interesting.
I'm not going to spoil that in case anyone hasn't played it. I know a lot of our listeners don't have the DLC. So if you haven't played it, go play it. You will get to see Hagalaz in all of its half-baked glory.
Yeah, go get some Haagen-Dazs. All right, let's move on with the rest of the show.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
All right, we're back. So let's jump forward a little bit. She's working with Cerberus now. What's her first assignment?
Miranda tells her that because Liara and Farron were ambushed by these broker mercenaries on Omega, it's likely that Shepard's body is actually there on the rock, this station.
So she was close.
She was close. In fact, she was red hot. Liara gets dropped off on a part of Omega then for her first assignment, and she gets out of the sky car with Miranda telling her the vague directive, find the body, bring it here, we'll pay your expenses.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
This is like getting hired for your first job in a given field, and the boss says, here's the objective, get it done. All right, I'm going on vacation, bye.
Right, here's your desk, here's your laptop, I'll be back in a week. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, I guess.
And also, you're getting paid a lot of money, so there's a certain expectation here.
Right.
Yeah. So normally, you would think that Liara, being hyper analytical, she'd have a ton of questions. In fact, she even says, I'm not familiar, and, you know, I don't even know where to start looking. But here, we again see a marked shift in Liara as a character. Just take this example, you know. Liara doesn't say much at this point, but suddenly she accuses Farron of being an agent for the Shadow Broker himself. And then she hits him with a haymaker at a left field.
Boom. And put it up on the screen right now. I love this picture of her punching up. She's got like this biotic punch just across his face.
It looks dope.
Yeah. And she's like, and he's like, ugh. You could have killed me, he says.
And those mercs could have killed me, Farron. You were the only person who I knew was coming to search for Shepard, but those mercs found me anyway. So either they knew exactly what you were up to, or you sold me out.
So she puts it together. She's like, okay, something's wrong here.
She realizes that because Cerberus was very frosty with Farron, that it was clear that he wasn't one of their own. And how was it, you know, that this ambush happened just after Farron escorted me away from the public? After all, he's the only one who knew what I was looking for. And Liara's right here. He's a double agent. So she lays into him.
I mean, that's pretty bold. That's, I mean, this isn't, so we're following this journey, right? We have the version of Liara we know from Mass Effect 1. She doesn't do anything like this in Mass Effect 1. This is a step in a different direction for her.
Oh, yeah. You know, she's trusting her instincts and she is taking bold, decisive action before gathering all the data. You know, she is kicking ass and taking names now. And since she's highly intelligent and observative, her instincts are right. You know, I also think the stakes are different. So it's a little bit of a different situation. Shepard's body and life are on the line. So she's come this far and she's not about to let some Drell Shadow Broker agent's lies get in the way. I think that she's always been skilled at picking up on these things, you know, when people are being deceitful. But now she's saying something about it. Now she's not, she's done being polite enough to let them think that she doesn't know.
Yeah. So what happens next?
Well, they argue for a little while with Farron ultimately telling Liara, hey, I didn't know about the Mercs either. But yeah, I was supposed to lead you away from any leads on Shep's body.
All right.
And so now we're like, okay, how much of the truth is he telling? Is this the truth? But it kind of just comes across like, okay, yeah, maybe he is telling the truth. I was supposed to lead you away. And then he says that he didn't know that the Shadow Broker was working with the Collectors, but that maybe Liara would be better off doing this thing on her own. And he says, you know what, maybe, and he's just throwing his hands up. Maybe you'd be better off doing this on your own. Mm-hmm. And she goes, oh, hell no.
She actually says, oh, hell no?
No, she doesn't.
Okay. She's just all of a sudden, she just breaks character. She goes, oh, hell no.
Oh, hell no.
Oh, hell no. And she gives him like the Z snap. And just like,
yeah, I mean, essentially, she gives him the biotic Z snap.
The biotic Z snap.
<That's>, it looked really cool.
So Sadie Cakes in chat says, I need a Frosty with Farron t-shirt or mug. Maybe we should have a Liara doing biotic Z snap.
Yes,
that would be amazing.
Frosties with Farron.
Oh my
and then
God.
On the back of the shirt it'd be like Liara and Farron like cheers in with Frosty
yeah,
mugs
yeah.
of beer.
Yeah.
So she says, this is my paraphrase, she says, hell no. And then she says, quote, I paid you to help me find Shepard. And whether it's my money or Miranda's, you're going to do it.
Right, so do it. Okay.
Yeah. Just do it. Yeah, we did not see this kind of tone from Liara any time in the past, including that love triangle conflict that happens in Mass Effect 1. And that does get a little heated, right? We just haven't seen this side of her so far in the lore. And we have a little panel to show from the
Here's the clip here. Where she's saying, oh no, I paid you to help me find Shepard, and whether it's my money or Miranda's, you're going to do it.
Right.
And then you want to read the next one?
Yeah, she says, I watched from my escape pod as Shepard died, Farron. This is my chance to redeem myself. It can be your chance, too. Mass Effect Redemption.
Yeah, oh, okay.
They're saying it. Oh, they're saying the title. Uh-huh. And then, you know, she gets vulnerable with Farron, you know, telling him this is the real reason for her setting out on this expedition in the first place.
Which
I think she
feels like a reveal to the audience, less of a reveal to Farron, because why does Farron doesn't care, right?
Right. Yeah, this is her talking to the audience.
Yeah.
And I think that this is, you remember last week when we said that this highly analytical person had the tendency to come across as robotic? Well, here we are seeing the exact opposite. She's being incredibly vulnerable. She is feeling such immense weight and such guilt. And I feel bad for Liara, you know? Mm-hmm. She witnessed this traumatic event with Shepard dying, and she blames herself, clearly, for part of it.
Right. And if you go back to the scene at the beginning of this episode, unless you romance someone else, she's the one who's last, other than Joker, who gets, you know, picked up and carried. She's the one who was the last one there who might have been able to help him survive.
Right. Exactly. And this just kind of builds to the case that Liara is canon.
Right.
Like canon attached right. to
well,
Shep.
Well, help them survive. I apologize. I said he, but sometimes I picture the male one in my head, sometimes I picture the female one, depending on which scene I looked at recently. Or
everyone thinks of their own Shepard,
yeah,
too. So,
yeah.
So You know, and this also kind of proves what we said before, that she always feels these things deeply, especially when they're related to Shepard. It's just that she's kept the feelings inside, out of politeness or out of duty or part of what I would assume is maybe the diplomatic aspect of Asari culture. But now she's been pushed to this point where she is not trying to save face. She's done with that.
Yeah.
And the stakes are higher, but she has this very personal reason for pursuing the mission with the vigor that she is.
Right. So does Farron know where to take her for Shepard?
He does. He does. He takes her back to where they met at Afterlife.
Oh.
And, you know, Liara's scratching her head saying like, huh? Like, this is where we met. We could have stayed here the whole time.
Right.
Well, remember, he said he was supposed to lead her away.
Well, right. Shepard, she was getting too close. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. She was getting too close, not necessarily to Shepard, but to Leeds to find Shepard. And Shepard isn't here, but Arya is. And she knows everything that's going on in Omega. And side note here, when Farron says, you know, Shep isn't here, but Arya is, Liara brings up and said, well, I don't know how, what this does. Well, what this has to do with human opera. And this is a classic Liara thing, right? She's not following. She's thinking in terms of like book knowledge that she must have read somewhere.
Right.
The fact that Liara knows about human opera is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee you Garrus wouldn't.
Right.
Or Rex. Rex probably not a big opera fan.
Imagine Krogan opera?
Oh, that'd be terrible. Actually, you know what? I would pay to hear like a Lucas Pavarotti impersonator who's Krogan.
And just like pitch shifted down 2 octaves. So it's like, it's not a tenor. It's just like super bass.
Like a Krogan singing Nessun Dorma from Pavarotti. That'd be amazing. So anyway, well, Liara and Farron walk into the club, and before, you know, I go any further, there is this tragic and disgusting and significant bit of lore that happens here. A Batarian sexually harasses Liara and grabs her arm and pulls her into the booth that he has with Avolus. And they're treating her like she is a sex worker and abusing her. And the Volus he's sitting with propositions Farron. And in fact, I should clarify, they're not treating her like she's a sex worker. They're treating her like she's being human trafficked,
right,
and that she's a slave.
Right.
And the Volus asks Farron, is this girl for sale, trader? The market's overflowing with Asari consorts since the attack on the Citadel. But my associate and I can always find a place for excess inventory.
Right. So we know these guys are total scumbags, but it also reveals some of the terrible things that have happened since that event. Like,
yeah,
that's,
yes,
that's dark.
And that, yeah, and that's why I wanted to take, you know, a bit to talk about that, because after Mass Effect 1, apparently numerous Asari were abducted and taken to Omega for the sex trade. And this is something that I didn't know before I read this comic. And that's if we are to believe this Volus, you know, but that regardless will not be Liara, because she kicks their asses.
As she should. Like, these people need to have their asses kicked.
Like, I think in the panel, the comic panel, I didn't look too closely. I could just see that they got their asses kicked. But it kind of looks like the Batarian has a hole in his head. Like, that's how hard she punched him. And I don't think she even, like, picked her gun out of her belt.
Almost like it was like a biotic, like, extension of her fist just went through his head or something. Yeah,
she propelled her fist at closer to like faster than light speeds.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Farron and Liara walk away from that, and then they ultimately get this meeting with Arya, where Liara at first is told to let him handle this, but when he omits the truth about the collectors being involved, then Liara is like, screw this, I'm going to speak up. And Arya immediately gets pissed off. So Liara's like, the collectors are involved, that's why this is a big deal. And Arya is immediately pissed off, and she's alarmed, and she's like, get out. Get these guys out of my sight right now. Like, get them out. But then Liara says, hold on, I thought you were going to tell us where we could find Shepard. And real quickly, just, you know, offhand, Arya is still shocked about the collectors being involved, but she tells them where these Blue Sun's mercenaries are handing off Shepard's body to a Shadow Broker agent. Mm-hmm. And so we have a little comic here, a panel from it here.
Yeah.
So the duo go there and they find exactly what they expected and more. They find Shepard's body in a stasis pod, right? And we're introduced also to the person standing next to the stasis pod, not just the Blue Sun's mercenary, but there is a very large Salarian who is like the Giga Chad of Salarians.
Yes.
He is the, he's named Tazik, and he is apparently the one of, or the only hitman on the Shadow Broker's roster. And it's this Giga Chad Salarian.
That's insane. Yeah. Yeah. He's crazy looking.
Yeah. And look, I think we should probably describe for our listeners what he looks like, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, you can tell he's Salarian by the little horns on his head, you know, the greenish skin. But he, like, if you turn the Terminator to a Salarian, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, it's basically Arnold the Salarian.
He's got these broad shoulders with this, like, onyx and red armor. He looks taller than the Krogan, which is crazy.
Big firm jaw.
He looks like about, he would probably weigh like twice the average weight of a normal, like, Salarian.
Right.
And yeah, he has this big, big ass stone jaw. And he's got this furrowed brow. His horns are smaller than normal because his head is just that massive.
Do you think his voice is still just like the other Salarians though?
I think it's just as fast, but it's deep.
Dude, I was thinking it'd be funny if it wasn't deep. Like, if he still talked like this, you know, like. So it says here in the panel, results he usually gets at the top. And then he speaks and says, identification looks right. Is this everything you found? Like, if that's the way he sounded.
And the Krogan says, yep, surprised there was that much. Human body must be able to take some real punishment.
I've known a few that couldn't. It doesn't fit the character at all. Your credits are here. If this isn't legit, I'll be back for them. And you go in the box.
Right, yeah. You may be wondering if I fired five shots or six. Well, do you feel lucky,
punk? Do you feel lucky, punk? Yeah. Yeah. All right, so yeah. These two are a fun duo. This is fun.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, in case you're wondering more about this stone jaw muscle lizard and why he looks like he eats Krogan for breakfast, well, then we will answer that when we pick up on this story next week.
It's Krogan for breakfast. What do you think Krogan tastes like?
Frog legs.
Rocks.
Which, by the way, rocks, which something between rocks and frog legs, but I'd be willing to bet that it's closer to like a salamander or something. I don't know. Like, I've never eaten a salamander. I have no idea what that would taste like.
No.
But fun fact about frog legs, I heard recently that France, being the world's largest consumer of frog legs, is actually being told to cool it recently because most of their frogs that they get are not actually like farmed frogs. They're wild caught. And a lot of them are coming from areas of Asia where the frogs are becoming like threatened or endangered.
Wow. Can you imagine if that was your job? Like, you're not a farmer. You are a frog collector. You're a frog hunter.
I'm a frog. Frog wrangler.
Frog wrangler. Wow. All right. Weird. Weird facts at the end of this episode. So this is exciting. But we have an episode two, though, because this story isn't done yet.
Yeah. This is just like the first half of the Mass Effect Redemption comic.
Right.
And there's still a lot more to talk about in terms of what Liara is even doing in the 2 years that Shepard's dead.
Yeah, I like this. I like this. It gives us a more well-rounded view of her character. And the story's cool, too. And you've got these crazy characters showing up. So it's been a lot of fun. But thank you for tuning in, everybody. Thank you for being here for the live stream and for listening to the show. Sam, you have anything else you want to share before we head out?
Yeah. So I've been traveling the past couple of weeks, but this weekend I am not traveling. So I will have time to stream some Mass Effect, and I do intend on doing that. If you're trying to catch any of my streams of my personal canon playthrough for Mass Effect, go ahead and follow me on Twitter and Twitch at N7 The Legend. And I'm also playing, I just finished my first playthrough of Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about that, and you were like, oh my God, this is so good. You need to finish it too. Cause I haven't finished it yet.
Oh my God. Yeah, it is. It really is. And I'm in this like post Baldur's Gate void where the last time I felt this lost after finishing a game was when I finished Mass Effect 3 for the first time.
Oh no. Does that mean you're going to do a Baldur's Gate podcast?
I feel like that would be a D&D lore podcast, right? Because they borrow all the lore from that.
Yeah. But like, here, I guess this is inside baseball. Like how does making a podcast work? We have the D&D Lorecast on the network. I started, I handed it off to some other people. It's a great show. Go check it out if you want to learn more about D&D. I still feel like you could, like there's a niche there for discussion in and around Baldur's Gate 3 primarily with references back to the previous two games and D&D lore that helps explain some of the events and some of the characters and things like that. So you could, it may even be like a limited series. Like maybe you do 40 episodes total that take into consideration all the things that you would want to learn about and get deeper knowledge, because it's such a replayable game. There's really cool characters in it. There's a lot of cool stuff that you could
interactions.
Yeah, you could just focus on that game. You could ask questions about like, well, what if you had this playthrough? What if you romance these characters? Like similar to what we do with Mass Effect, but do it very primarily focused on Baldur's Gate 3.
That'd be fun. That would be really fun. It'd be a huge undertaking.
It'd be a lot
just
of work.
Just one playthrough. And, you know, I'm a completionist. I tried my best. Just one playthrough was 254 hours.
Yes. Yeah. It would be a lot of work, but I think there'd probably be an audience for it. So, I don't know. It's worth considering. But go check out Sam's stuff. Go check out his live streams and things like that. Also, you can check out my shows. I do more lore shows. So if you are as excited as I am about the Fallout show, which I was a little bit hesitant about, but with the latest trailer and some of the interviews and things I've seen, I think they're going to do it right. I'm more and more on the side of, I think this is actually going to work. It's going to be good. So if you're a fan of Fallout and you like the games, you're getting into the TV show, I do the Fallout Lorecast. You can check out that show. The Lord of the Rings Lorecast, I do a bunch of other shows as well. But just go to robotsradio.net. Look everything up. You can find my shows, a bunch of other shows on the network. Lots of good stuff. So thanks for being here, everybody. And until next time, I guess, if you get accosted by somebody trying to sell you into slavery, then I don't know, punch them through the head. It worked for Liara.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the right solution.
Think twice before picking a fight with a Giga Chancellorian.
There you go. There you go. All right. We'll continue the story next week. See you next time.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.